From the studios of NPR West, this is Day to Day. I'm Alex Cohen.
I'm Alex Chadwick. The lead story again today, the assassination of former Pakistani Prime Minister Benazir Bhutto. There are new developments into the investigation of her murder yesterday.
Pakistan's Interior Ministry now says they have recorded proof that Pakistani al-Qaeda leader Fethullah Masood was behind the assassination.
We just have an intelligence intercept that was recorded this morning, in which Fethullah Masood has congratulated his people for carrying out this cowardly act.
That's an Interior Ministry spokesman earlier today. Later, we're going to talk with a Pakistani journalist, Najim Sethi. His paper published a story of threats from that al-Qaeda leader against Benazir Bhutto.
My own paper ran a story shortly before Benazir came to Pakistan from one of the Taliban leaders. Fethullah Masood had given an interview in which he had said he has a squad of suicide bombers ready to kill Benazir Bhutto when she returns. Why? Because she is an American agent.
Joining us now to talk about these developments is Laura King, correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. She's in Islamabad. Laura, thank you for joining us. And can you tell us a bit about this press conference held today by Pakistan's Interior Ministry? What have we learned about this al-Qaeda message?
Well, the spokesman for the Interior Ministry made what was a somewhat startling claim that the government had information that a leader of the Taliban, who is believed to have links to the al-Qaeda network, was probably behind the assassination. The man named is a leader called Fethullah Masood, who is a wanted figure who is believed to be in the tribal areas along the Afghan border. The Interior Ministry spokesman, Javed Iqbal Chima, said that that Masood had been featured in a conversation that was intercepted by authorities that appeared to back up the charge that he was indeed responsible.
I spoke with another reporter in Pakistan today who told me that apparently shortly after this happened, they washed down the entire scene. How well will they be able to investigate what happened and who's truly responsible for Benazir Bhutto's death?
Well, I think the investigation is going to be problematic in many respects, not the least the forensic aspect that you mentioned. I did witness that scene as well in Rawalpindi, where a short time after the bombing, they were out there with pressure hoses washing down the scene, washing away debris and other items that might have been helpful in a forensic sense. But I think this investigation, like those of virtually all major bombings in Pakistan, is going to be hindered by investigative procedures that are not like those normally accepted in the West.
There's also been some new developments in terms of the cause of death. Can you tell us what you've heard so far?
That also has come from the Interior Ministry, which is saying, again, this is being greeted with considerable skepticism, saying that the cause of death was a skull fracture suffered when Benazir Bhutto struck her head during the suicide attack. The same spokesman for the Interior Ministry, Javed Iqbal Chima, said that she was not struck by bullets, as eyewitnesses and doctors reported. He said that instead she hit her head as the bomb blast rocked her vehicle.
Los Angeles Times correspondent Laura King, thank you so much.
Thank you.
We go now to Griff Whitty, Islamabad bureau chief for The Washington Post. He's now in the town of Larkana, near the site of Benazir Bhutto's funeral. Griff, can you give us a sense of what the scene's been like there?
Well, there's been a real outpouring of grief here in Larkana. The people of this part of Pakistan feel an incredibly personal, emotional attachment to Benazir Bhutto and her family. This is where her family is from originally, and the Bhuttos are everywhere in this part of Pakistan. And what we saw today were tens of thousands of people coming out to collectively mourn for their leader. She represented the interests of the oppressed people of Pakistan, the poor people of Pakistan, and they came out in real grief and also a great deal of anger as well.
And can you describe visually, what did this funeral procession look like?
Nothing like a state funeral that you would normally see for a former head of state. It was a very chaotic affair, really, with people pushing and shoving and tens of thousands of people trying to get a glimpse of Benazir Bhutto's coffin before it was lowered into the ground. Benazir Bhutto had commissioned a very large and elaborate marble tomb for her family just outside of Larkana, and it was still in the process of being built over the past 10 years. They've been working on it, and it is still not finished, but it's where her father is buried, and it's where her two brothers are buried, and as of today, it's where she is buried as well.
There have been reports of rioting in many cities throughout Pakistan. What can you tell us about that?
There has indeed been quite a bit of unrest today in Pakistan. People going out into the streets, setting cars ablaze. They've been setting banks ablaze, police stations, police vehicles. We have a number of people who have been killed. People are trying to express the rage that they feel, and they're going primarily after targets that are associated with the government in some way.
Benazir Bhutto was adored by her supporters, but she was also a very controversial figure. Can you remind us why and give us a sense of how her critics have been responding to her assassination?
A lot of people felt that she was, although she presented herself as the embodiment of democracy in Pakistan, that she was not terribly democratic herself. She was, after all, the chairperson for life of her Pakistan People's Party, and her two terms in power in the late 1980s and the 1990s were marked by widespread corruption. So she was someone who generated quite a bit of controversy. President Musharraf was fond of referring to her period in power as the years of sham democracy in Pakistan. And today, the government is really, in a not-so-subtle way, pointing the finger of blame for her death at her, saying that she should have known better than to be exposing herself in the way that she did at the rally in Rawalpindi.
Griff Whitty of The Washington Post spoke with us from Larkana, Pakistan. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Najam Sethi is a Pakistani newspaper editor. His publications, The Friday Times and The Daily Times in Lahore, Pakistan, have been friendly to Benazir Bhutto and her Pakistan People's Party. Najam, welcome back to Day to Day. And this is one day after the killing. Her funeral has taken place. Maybe you're able to begin to gather your thoughts. Where do things stand for Pakistan now?
In terms of the process that was underway, i.e. elections and a transition to democracy, I think that's in serious jeopardy at the moment. One of the mainstream parties that had earlier decided to take part in the elections, i.e. run by former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, has actually now announced a boycott. But the problem is not just that. The problem is that there is a backlash in this country against the ruling party, which is sympathetic to General Musharraf.
Your newspaper, The Daily Times, reports today that the leaders of the ruling party have all more or less gone into hiding. They won't answer their telephones. They've turned off their cell phones. You can't reach any of them. Why is that?
Most Pakistanis think that the intelligence agencies have something to do with Ms. Bhutto's assassination. They're not entirely convinced that Al-Qaeda was behind it. That's the sort of cynical conspiracy theory reaction that there is in this country. When Ms. Bhutto first came back on the 18th of October, following the first assassination attempt on her, she actually pointed the finger at what she called were remnants of the Zia regime, who were part of General Musharraf's administration.
The Zia regime is the regime of former General Zia ul-Haq, the man who, in fact, killed her father.
That's right, who executed her father. Subsequently, however, Ms. Bhutto clarified that what she meant was that they were Pakistan Talibanized elements who were in cahoots with al-Qaeda and who had some influence in the old agencies. But most people in this country are still reluctant to believe that al-Qaeda could be directly behind it, even though al-Qaeda statesmen, spokesmen like al-Zawahiri and even Osama bin Laden in the September tapes had clearly said that their target was General Musharraf and they wanted to destabilize Pakistan because they said this is an outpost of the U.S.
Najam, you've said that many people in Pakistan believe that elements within the government may have had something to do with the assassination. Do you believe that? Do you personally believe
that? No, I don't. I don't believe that. I think this is squarely an al-Qaeda assassination plot. Don't forget, al-Qaeda has tried twice to assassinate. Certainly his own agencies couldn't have been behind it. Al-Qaeda has tried to assassinate former Prime Minister Shaukat Aziz. Certainly the agencies couldn't have been behind it. They've tried twice to assassinate the Interior Minister. They tried once with Benazir. So clearly this is al-Qaeda. The footprints are very clearly al-Qaeda's. But there is a reluctance in Pakistan to admit that this is Pakistan's war against al-Qaeda. Most people say this is America's war that Pakistan is prosecuting and that therefore they're not prepared to believe that al-Qaeda could be targeting a popular leader like Benazir.
Although, mind you, my own paper ran a story shortly before Benazir came to Pakistan from one of the Taliban leaders in Baluchistan, which is our tribal area where there is a base for the Taliban and Al-Qaeda operatives, in which Baitullah Masood, this is the name of the Taliban leader, had given an interview in which he had said that, you know, he has a squad of suicide bombers ready to kill Benazir Bhutto when she returns. Why? Because she is an American agent. And we had published that story. But even when we published that story, a lot of people in my own media poo-pooed it and said, oh, this is exaggeration. Why should the Taliban and Al-Qaeda want to get rid of Benazir? So that's the level of credibility that exists in this country about what Qaeda is capable of doing or what it's not capable of doing.
She's described as charismatic, as someone who had a commanding personal presence. But this is someone who twice was elected prime minister, who twice was then forced from office over corruption charges, and the notorious Pakistani nuclear proliferator, A.Q. Khan, made deals while she held power. Is she really the leader? Was she the person that Pakistan must have at this moment?
Well, the thing is that when she first became prime minister, she was very inexperienced, and the Pakistani military establishment wasn't keen on having her. So they conspired to get rid of her and make her government quite ineffective. The second time around, she was quite dutiful and loyal to the Pakistani military, and they actually went about doing whatever they wanted her to do. But nonetheless, the charges of impropriety in terms of corruption and many of them were well-founded, although none was ever proven. So, and when she was dismissed, it was because she ended up fighting with her own president. So she really had a bad deal. But at the same time, she wasn't such a good administrator. But she was genuinely a very brave, courageous, and popular leader. And the downtrodden of this country certainly voted for her time and again. And this time it was expected that she would get at least a majority.
Najam Sethi, newspaper editor in Lahore, Pakistan. Najam, thank you for speaking with us again, and good luck to you all there.
Thank you.